Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in the NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. After Republicans and Democrats failed to come to an agreement on a fourth COVID-19 relief package, President Trump signed several executive orders designed to provide relief to millions of financially struggling Americans. On this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour, Compliance Corner member and CEO of MZQ Consulting, Jennifer Berman, joins us to discuss exactly what these orders do and how they could impact you and your clients. Marcy, can you quickly remind listeners what the significance of an executive order is?
So I do want to point out there is a little bit of a difference with some of the pieces that we're going to be discussing today. And we're talking about four different pieces that came out from President Trump. One of them is an executive order, and the other three are technically memorandum, which weigh a little bit differently than an executive order. So an executive order, and the one that we'll discuss today is on the payroll tax, so it is one of the more important ones. That one is the executive order, and it does carry a little more weight than a memorandum. A memorandum does not have to be filed in the Federal Register or include a justification of presidential authority, which is different with executive orders that do have to cite where in the Constitution the president actually has the power to take this action. In this case, in these memorandum, President Trump did actually cite the Constitution, so he did go that extra little step. But I do want to point out they are a bit different, and then they do then direct different agencies to take action on behalf of his requests within either the executive order or the memorandum. So it doesn't mean that these things are going to take place immediately. It's a direction for agencies to take the steps towards making those things happen.
Can you briefly summarize each executive action?
Sure. So some of the ones that won't have as much of an impact on NAHU and their clients are an extension of the student loan relief for student loan payments and the accrual of interest, a moratorium on evictions for renters, and then the two that I think folks are going to be very interested in as NAHU members are an extension of unemployment insurance by $400 a week, and that is directed to have states make 25% of those payments. So it's going to be very interesting to see how many states would actually be able to do that if it is enforced. And then lastly, the availability for employers to determine to do some type of payroll tax holiday. And that piece is the executive order. So the others were the memorandum. And there are a lot of questions about how that could actually go into place and how both employers and how payroll companies are going to react to this, especially because it is in the form of an executive order at this time.
Yeah. So Marcy, if I'm going to just dive in a little bit more with some thoughts on this particular executive order. And I think that the most important piece at the outset is President Trump has been a huge advocate of a payroll tax holiday for a long time. This came up in round three when the CARES Act actually came out. So it's been a conversation even before that. This executive order does not create a payroll tax holiday. It creates an option for a payroll tax deferral. And that's really critical. So what do I mean there? A payroll tax holiday is we're going to stop payroll taxes for some period of time. You simply aren't going to owe payroll taxes for the period of time, maybe from, you know, September 1st to December 31st, 2020. That is not what happened. That would take an act of Congress. So what this is the president saying, hey, IRS, which by the way, I control because it's part of the administrative state, let people stop paying their taxes for some period of time. But that doesn't mean they're not going to become due later. And so that's the first and probably the most critical piece of this rule that I've been talking to employers and to advisors about. So yeah, theoretically, he's told the IRS, come out with a rule, explain to us how to do it, that allows people beginning in September to not pay, and there's an income threshold involved, but to not pay your payroll taxes through the end of the year. Incidentally, employers already have the option to not pay for their payroll taxes through the end of the year. That is a clear deferral written into the CARES Act. So employers have the option to stop making their contributions, but the CARES Act very specifically says, hey, you're going to pay this in 2021 and 2022. So the folks who are doing that aren't paying today, but they know they're going to have that tax liability tomorrow. So that's the first important point. It's a deferral. It's not a holiday. The second important point is it is optional for employers. So even once this is implemented, employers don't have to do it. Now, of course, employees might be asking about it. It'll be in the press. There could be questions on it. But employers do not have to. It'll be optional no matter what. And then the third piece that combines these two is this puts employers in an interesting position, because the president clearly issued this order in an effort to sort of say, Congress, I want you to pass this bill. I want this deferral. Do it and make it a holiday. But they may or may not do that. So it puts employers in an interesting position, because if they do this to try to help their employees, because they're asking for it, they might be hurting them. Because if Congress doesn't pass an actual payroll tax holiday, they're going to be in a position where their employees, and we're talking about low-wage workers here, right? There's a threshold. They're going to end up owing taxes that they didn't anticipate owing. All of that is irrespective of what this may or may not do to funding for Medicare and Social Security and all of those other things. I'm not even going to go there today, Marcy. But those are issues too, because none of the rules and entitlements have changed. So forgetting what you think about the entitlements, the fact that the entitlements are there hasn't gone away. So that would take congressional action as well. So this can be interpreted as more deficit spending in some ways if it were a holiday, which it's not.
Right.
I know. Somebody said, like, I guess whoever's running and listening to me while you're running, I'm sorry. I didn't make this stuff up. I don't even know what I say these days.
And as we always say, words matter, right? It's not a holiday. And just like you mentioned, a lot of the repercussions are not just the fact that if it doesn't become a holiday, that employers are going to be responsible and employees are going to be responsible for paying this back later, which always when that happens, somehow seems to be a shock, even though we're highlighting that now. But also that those payroll taxes do go to fund some of those other pieces, like you mentioned, Medicare, Social Security, all pieces that we know are struggling now, right? This also makes me think of some action recently that hasn't all added up between Congress and the administration, similar to the extension of COBRA enrollment availability and the fact that Congress has not acted to fully fund COBRA. And so this, to me, is just another action that really puts employers in a tight spot and could put them on the hook for a lot of funds and really is not acting to provide relief for them.
No question there. I couldn't agree with you more. I was thinking of that too. But here's the one advantage to this over that. And this gets into what I tell my clients when I talk to them about what to do here. That outbreak period rule, which is miserable and very, very difficult for employers, is not optional. This is. And so the advice that I've been giving to my clients is just don't do it. If your employees are upset, tell them the reason why is because we don't want you to owe more money later. And we'll do it as soon as we know that you don't have to pay it later. We don't want you to put your taxes on a credit card. But there is an answer to this one. And unfortunately, that answer is we can't take advantage of this potential benefit that the president has provided because Congress hasn't backed it up.
Treasury Secretary Mnuchin previously commented that a payroll tax holiday was not on the table. Will the president's order change the secretary's stance?
The president is the secretary's boss. So I don't know what you think, Marcy, but I mean, the one thing I can say for sure that an executive order does is direct the administration. The president has complete authority over the executive branch, and Secretary Mnuchin works directly for the president. So it should.
And I think it changes his position as he's going over to negotiate with House and Senate leadership on both sides of the aisle for a next COVID package, because a lot of this is directed to try to get Congress to take action. So this is giving the language now to Mnuchin, where maybe he wasn't going over and using this language previously, to now this is part of his platform and his script for going over and trying to do those negotiations. And of course, like you said, Dan, he said he wasn't in favor of a holiday. And as Jen said, this isn't a holiday. So maybe this is where he gets to say that he got his way. Who knows?
In regards to the president's order to extend unemployment insurance at the reduced rate of $400 per week, is this order enforceable?
Marcy, what do you think? I feel like everything I learned in law school has been thrown out the window in the past couple of years. My answer is, I don't know, but I don't think so.
Right. And I'm going to go to my trusty lawyer answer of, it depends. So this piece is one of those memorandums, so not at the level of an executive order, although the language does direct agency action. So it does use very similar language to an executive order. I think it's going to need a little more backing to be able to be enforceable. One thing that is being challenged is because it is an allocation of funds, and Congress has to act to be able to do that. So there are some concerns there that the president is asking to allocate funds without congressional approval. And then also the directive that states take up 25% of this. Some states have already come out and said, you know, we can't afford this. This is not something that we've budgeted for. They're already suffering and are asking for more and more support from the federal government and funding from some of the packages that the House and Senate are considering. And so again, here, we're in that situation where the administration seems to be acting under the assumption that Congress is later going to do something and fund what they're asking for. But if they don't, the states are really going to be at a disadvantage and are going to go into some type of deficit. So here, I think we're going to see states kind of taking, Jen, your suggestion for the payroll tax piece that you said to employers, I think the states are going to take that advice and say, we're not going to do this right now until we know that we're going to get the funding for this and we know that we have some backing here.
And I will add there that there is lots of precedent and it is certainly legal for federal laws to provide funding, particularly where there's a state match, contingent upon the state saying, I'm going to do it. So think Medicaid expansion, yes, guys, absolutely. Right? So, or exchanges, right? So states are independent legal entities that get to make their own decisions. Even things like getting to a national drinking age of 21, that was right from a highway funding bill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there is a lot the federal government can do to induce states to act in the manner that they want them to, but the federal government is not sovereign over the states in all things.
Aside from the executive actions already discussed, some NAHU members may be confused by the news that President Trump may release an executive order protecting pre-existing conditions. What would that order do? Aren't pre-existing conditions already covered under the ACA?
I'm pretty sure they are, guys. You haven't lost your minds. Yes, pre-existing conditions are protected under the ACA. It's interesting. I mean, we've seen things to sort of try to chip away at those pre-existing conditions and exclusions from the Trump administration in different ways. But yeah, nothing's changed here. That protection for pre-existing conditions is part of the Affordable Care Act, went into effect, gosh, back in 2011 for children and then 2014 for everybody else. And none of that has changed in all of this time. So, you know, it is interesting for us as an industry to think about, you know, what that renewed focus from the Trump administration on pre-existing conditions really means. If there is another 4 years of Trump administration, you know, does that mean that he's backing down on repeal and replace? I don't know any of the answers. What I can say unequivocally is that existing law today does prohibit exclusion of participation based on pre-existing conditions. So that can't happen anywhere under the Affordable Care Act.
And we are expecting, what we've heard from our sources over at the White House is that if we do see an executive order, or he said he was going to issue a strong statement, so it could be another memorandum, but that it would basically say something to the effect of that the president directs the Secretary of HHS to uphold the protections for pre-existing conditions. So it would be to reinforce what we already have, but of course, the language isn't going to say, uphold the ACA protections for pre-existing conditions. It will use very careful language about that to give the effect that there is a change here, but it really won't be changing anything. It'll be reinforcing what we already have.
The White House said that the president signed these orders because Congress did not act prior to August recess. What is the likelihood of a fourth coronavirus package being passed now?
Yes, Dan, and I kind of alluded to this earlier. Many of these actions, it's believed, the administration took to try to get Congress to come to some type of compromise between the House Democrat-backed HEROES Act and the Republican Senate-backed HEALS Act. And unfortunately, what we've seen even towards the end of this week is that those negotiations are still just falling apart and there's not a meeting of the minds. However, as we kind of discussed throughout this with so many different pieces of these executive actions, if they do go into place, even part and partial, without the backing of either funding or different actions from Congress, we could see some unintended consequences because they won't be implemented in the full capacity that's intended. So although it's not forcing Congress into making a deal this week, it could color the negotiations for possibly having something in September. What we're hearing now is possibly something after Labor Day, which when you think about the fact that the House passed the HEROES Act in May, just seems like a really long time to be negotiating this while people are really in need of relief. But hopefully this will have the intended effect of getting something passed, but not the unintended consequences of having these pieces move forward without the backing and funding that Congress needs to provide.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. Jen, what are we toasting to this week?
I'm going to toast to our constitutional system and balance of powers. And, you know, we're testing that in every which way these days. And I'm kind of toasting it from an academic perspective. But this idea that, you know, we have this executive branch and we have this legislative branch and then there's the judiciary. Don't get me started. I think they may have overturned parts of the FFCRA this week. We won't worry about it yet. We're waiting on that. But this incredibly complex system that constantly can be tested and bent and molded in different ways for different needs is endlessly fascinating to me as a lawyer. And so wherever you land on your politics and what's right and wrong here is so hard to know, but we have this system that is both stable and flexible, and I love that.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NAHU.org.